Alright, so on the left side there is line, space, line, space, line, space, line, space, line. This is the, if you're looking at a piano, if you scroll down to the second page, Bob, you'll see a piano, keyboard, and then underneath you see the musical notation. That's called a staff, and on the top, there's the treble clef with the little squirrely. It kind of looks like a G and an S put together at the top. See that?
Yeah.
Okay, and then on the bottom, looks like a backwards C. That's the bass clef.
Yeah, now you've got a 45-degree incline of zeros. What's
yes,
that?
Yes, those are notes. Those are notes notated. So when you look at the very left A, you can see the note notated on musical notation underneath the bass clef, and you can then follow the line up to where that would be on the keyboard of the piano. So if I'm reading music, I would look at that and I would think, okay, boom, 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 and I would play that exact A on the keyboard. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, is that a whole keyboard?
Different keyboards have different amount of have a different amount of octaves. Like Ian was talking about the Bösendorfer tonight, so that would have like an extra few octaves of what you're seeing here. But this is a good general length of a key. I think it's 88 keys generally that they're on a general piano, regular piano.
So the middle C, everybody knows where that is. You count to the left. You've got here 8, 8, 8, 24. And what's a subcontra? How many is that?
Subcontra octave?
Two, looks like two. So that's 23 eighths. That's 26 keys, positions.
Okay.
From middle C.
When you see middle C, if you go to the left, you'll see one small octave.
Yeah.
Then you'll see another C. See that?
Oh, that adds, that starts.
So that's what you're looking at. That's an octave, and then so a small octave would be eight notes from C to the lower C. And if you're going to the left and you do another one, that's a great octave, that's two octave spans. And then a contra octave and a sub contra octave. I mean, those must be. Maybe those are talking about, I'm not like a musical theory genius or anything, so if other people know, definitely chime in. It probably is talking about like a tuba would be, the frequency of a tuba would be living in the subcontra octave, right? Like that's where a tuba would be.
Mm.
And a bassoon would be in the contra octave probably.
Mm.
So that's probably why they're referring to those things.
How many years of piano lessons do you do before you learn this chart, the octaves?
When you're learning about an octave is probably part of the basic music theory. Yep. It would be as you're learning to put your hands on the piano in a certain specific way and you're learning notation, an octave would be early on. Yep. It's a basic thing. So, because when you hear about a scale, Bob, if you start at middle C, and you go to the right this time, an octave would be, like, C would be Do. So, Do, Re, Mi, that would be D, D, E. On that visual that you're looking at, the C, and then the D is orange. Someone is frickin' right now.
Yeah, let me mute that person.
We're so entertaining, you gotta get the popcorn.
I don't see them talking now.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Bob, that C in the middle, if you were to go to the right, you can see C, and then D is in orange, and then E is in yellow.
Yeah.
So it's like the C is do, re is the D, mi is the E, fa. So I'm going to go all the way up to C. So do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. So I just made a scale, a major scale going up.
Why do you have the zeros on the bottom to the left and then becomes the upper lines? The zeros go up from there. What gets you from the lower thing? You call them the lower one the bass clef?
Yep.
And then you jump up to the GS.
Treble clef.
What's that?
Treble.
Yeah, why do you jump up there?
Because in order to notate what note to strike, the notation is always referring to paper or to a digital presentation of. That's musical notation at the bottom with the clefs. And so what you're calling zeros, we would call those notes.
Yeah.
And
those are whole notes.
Yep. The reason that you need to move to the treble clef is because at a certain point on the bass clef, if you keep going, you're just kind of floating up there and it's really hard to read that. So you can see that the highest B note on the bass clef, it ends the main staff and it has those little ticks. And then the B note is hovering above one of the last ticks.
So what's a tick?
Well, it's what I'm calling those little dashed lines. You see the long lines?
The verticals? The verticals. Yes.
No, the horizontals. Okay.
So they're not dashed. Oh, over on the left, the little okay, below the bass clef.
Let me say it this way. So go to the treble clef with me. And on the treble clef, you can see there's five lines going left to right. And they're very long. And the treble clef has them too. And on the right side, there's a thicker black line.
Mm-hmm.
You see that? And then on the left side, the two clefs are, there's a bar that's bracketing those together and there's a darker line. So on the top, the treble clef is five lines. That is E, G, B, D, and F. So when a note is on one of those lines, on the very first line, if you know how to read music, that very first line on the treble clef, when a note is on there, it's always E. And that's what refers to every good boy does fine that Ion talks about. It's a naming, I can't think of what those are called right now, but it's like a clue for when you're learning musical notation of how to remember.
A mnemonic. Mnemonic.
Okay, yeah, a mnemonic. Thanks, Maggie. So, to answer your question about why you would go from the bass clef to the treble clef is because as you're reading the notation, those horizontal lines stop, right? You can see that on the bass clef, there's only five.
And on the bass clef, you mean the five long lines? Or
yes, the long lines that the bass clef has and the treble clef have. They both have those horizontal lines.
So, yeah, they don't stop. Where do they stop?
Yes, they. So look at the very last B on the bass clef. It's purple. You see
the
that?
The B. Yeah, the B.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you see how that note is floating above those five horizontal lines on the bass clef?
Yeah.
You see how it's floating up there?
Yeah.
So those lines are help guides because it's so far off the bass clef that you have to, that they've written those little lines, I'm calling them tick, to kind of orient you so you can think, okay, I know the last horizontal line on the bass clef is an A. You know, so this is all the stuff you learn when you're learning how to read music.
Hmm.
So that's why they would not continue showing the notation up there because it just would float and there'd be so many ticks. They might as well start showing it on the treble clef instead.
Yeah, so you're saying the little ticks are the little short lines underneath the last six notes that are going up that are above the five lines.
Right.
Okay.
Those are like little helpers because if they put those, you'd have to kind of just guess what one they're referring to. So you wouldn't keep going on the bass clef. You would just instead start notating that same note. So if you follow that B that we've been talking about, if you go vertically up, you can see that same note on the piano is notated on the treble clef instead. See that? So that's the same note.
The it's in treble clef.
Yeah, the one that's floating above. It's in the five
lines. Yeah, is in it.
The one that's floating above the five lines on the bass clef is the same note on the piano as written in the treble clef that's on the line.
Yeah, it's in the middle.
That's the same note. Yep. And if you follow that vertical line continually upwards, you'll see the B on the actual piano that you would play.
So you, each zero whole note is a plunk with your finger.
Yep. It is.
So, you see people play very reasonably, they can play quite fast. They're not following this, are they? If they have written music,
Yes, they are.
Sounds like, you have to coordinate your eye, ear.
That is exactly what
you have. And hand.
And hand.
Yeah, the faster they play, the more it looks like Frank Zappa's Black Page. That's really fast.
Yeah.
It's a lot of plunk.
So
yes, Bob, that's true. So music on a class, so when something's a classical piece of music, my personal take on it is that if it's notated on a musical staff like this, it has some grounding in classical music. Whereas like when we were a band, on, we never needed to notate our music like this. Mm. We played chords and we wrote our lines from feeling and from ear, and it was all more play by ear, and we knew the chords. Mm-hmm. We knew how to improv in that key. But we would not be reading music like this in order to play our songs.
Did you have any visual layout?
Like a set list, or when we would learn the music, I would write like the chords down, the name of the chords, like this is an E and then a G and then an A, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have this map. You didn't have these five
lines.
We didn't have
musical notation, no. No. But Zappa, since he was a composer, he was around with a lot of his stuff having musical notation. So that's another way he straddled, you know, both of the lines, like the rock and the classical stuff.
Well, how did he show a chord on his script?
That would be, let's see. It'd be easy to show you.
Bob, you're an awesome questioner. You're showing you an awesome questioner because you're asking the right questions that I want to ask, and you're asking them right when I need to hear them. Perfect. Go ahead, Lisa. Sorry.
No, I thought that same thing. I'm like, oh, Bob's
question. I had terrible music teachers in the elementary school. Terrible. They never fucking explained what you just laid out in the last 10 minutes. Fucking
that's
shit.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I learned so much just what you just said, and I'm like, fuck, I didn't get this shit in elementary school, and they try to think you read music and never explain the treble clef and the bass clef. Anyway.
So what did they explain? What did they explain?
I put it this way, Bob. I do not ever remember what she just did. I have no idea what they did. I learned how to play by ear, but never read music shit. Hey, go ahead.
I learned this in elementary school.
Well, you had a better elementary school than I, Madeline. Listen, continue. Yeah. Go ahead, listen.
It was a racist. They put dumb white people in it. Fuck up the black people.
There you go. Maybe. I've never been a racist conspiracy, but it might have been because they were fucked up, man. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, just put a link in the chat so that I can answer your question about the chords.
Yeah, you have something to click on it in the chat?
Yeah, click on it, Bob. Let me know okay. when you're there.
Okay, music theory chords. Oh, I see. They're bunched up.
Yep. So the whole notes that you're seeing on the first thing we looked at, those are single notes. Like do, re, mi, fa.
But they happen at the same time.
Do. But, well, the thing we were looking at, that's more just like a musical theory thing. You wouldn't necessarily play that. Right? That's just
yeah, but
a,
it's showing how you do it. Your finger goes in the first chart, but in the second chart, you put your finger on several notes. That's a chord.
Wait. Oh, okay. That. So now you're looking at the chord. Yes. Okay. So the chord is, imagine your thumb is playing the bottom, your middle
yeah.
finger's playing the middle, and your pinky's playing the top. On a keyboard, you would hit that like that. And obviously a guitar plays chords differently, you know, than a keyboard, but a keyboard's an easy way to follow the musical theory. So that's what a chord looks like. And this is called where's Demetri? This is called a triad, I think. And, and then that C on the bottom, the first chord, that C major chord. I want to show you, I want to say something else about the treble clef lines, okay? So.
What does MIN stand for? Minimum?
Minor.
Minor, okay.
Yep, so C major, and then D minor, E minor, F major.
Right.
So, on the treble clef that you're seeing there, you see those same five horizontal lines. And then in
yeah.
between the lines, there are spaces. So we can see the first chord, a C major chord, is all on lines. It's on a C, on an E, which is the middle note, and on a G, which is the top note of that first chord. So when we look at the middle note, we can see it's on the first horizontal line of the treble clef. That is E, and the mnemonic Ion talks about is every good boy does fine. So when you look up on that going vertically on the horizontal lines, the first note is E, the second line is G, the third line, which we don't have a chord with on that first chord, we don't have a note playing, but that line is B, so every good boy does, the fourth line.
Are you describing C major and the three zeros?
No, I'm describing what the lines and spaces are. Because you can see the D minor chord, that's in the spaces.
Yeah.
Right? It's not on the lines,
yeah.
it's the spaces. So I'm connecting how Ion talks about the lines and the spaces.
Right.
So the lines are every good boy does fine. So the top horizontal, you can see in the D, the B diminished chord on the very far right, that starts on a B, the middle note is a D, and that top horizontal line of the treble clef, that's an F. Every good boy does fine.
Mm.
So that B diminished chord is boy does fine, B,
yeah.
D, F. Okay? And
yeah.
then you can see the F major chord. In the middle there, the F,
yeah.
M, A, C, that's all on the spaces. That first bottom note of the triad chord, so you think about your thumb, your middle finger, and your pinky, that bottom note starts on F. The next space up is A. The third space up is C. And the mnemonic one we learned about this is F, A, C, E. It spells face. So the one that's not showing on the F major chord at the very top, that space that's created there between the two lines, that's an E. So F, A, C, E,
yes.
those are the spaces.
Yeah, remember in the angel chart you had F, A, C, E.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Where's that?
And the angel diagram when it showed the airs and the keys. you know, it's when you would get the email from me with the words. And the FACE would stand there in its own separate space. I don't know.
Supplements, in the Revelation
right,
supplements, Alyssa.
Supplement. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's
yep.
what I call the supplements.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Okay.
May not be connected to this.
No, that's a good dot. That's a good dot to check out. Okay. So that's cord, Bob. And then if we go back to the other page that we were talking about before.
Yep.
Okay. So scrolling back up to the very first, actually no. Yep, let's go to the first page. So at the very top, I've cropped out parts of the keyboard. And you can
you mean
see
the
there.
Octaves.
Let's call
Are you looking at something else?
Go to the very top of pages in that PDF. Yep.
Yeah.
So the first
above
page.
The half step modulation.
Right. So I've cropped in two different croppings of the keyboard.
Hmm.
And the one on the left does show an octave. It shows E to E or F
right.
to F or G flat to G flat. But that's just a small snippet, right?
Yeah.
So we can see the white keys and the black keys. Now,
why is there two letters, like, on the black key to the left, G, B, and F sharp? Why
because
is that above the F?
Depending on the key that the song is composed in, that will be referred to either as a sharp or a flat. So when you're looking at the musical notation, a key can be notated. That's more complex theory. I can show you that in a second. But those treble and bass clefs that we were looking at, those didn't have any sharps or flats next to them.
Right.
And it means that they were in the key of C.
Hmm.
Okay? So
they don't have, key of C doesn't have sharp and flats.
Correct. Correct.
So why, if it's got these two things there, the G flat, F sharp, there's a choice, why is there two there? Why only those two?
Don't really understand your question. Why
there's
only
two
the
there's two letters in the black
mm-hmm.
part
above
the F on the left.
Yeah.
Why are there two things there?
So if you were to be playing in the key of G,
mm-hmm.
the way that music tones work in terms of the frequency and the hertz and scale, like a normal scale. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. We could transpose that to starting at G. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, do. So then so would become do. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. I just transposed C major to G major scale.
G major to what?
I transposed, the first scale I did was a C major, and then I took that because there's a G in that C major scale, so I started at the G and made that do, and then I started the scale in G major. So when I
the G and the F above the F in the black part, what you're just talking about,
is that referring to that? I'm getting to
that.
So on the right side of the top of this page, you can see a longer snippet of the black and white keys.
Mm.
Okay? So look for the G. You see the G on there?
On the bottom.
The
G along the bottom. The row of letters.
Yep, so
C, D, E, F, G.
So let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. So above half-step modulation is a shorter, smaller image starting at E, right, on the left? And then...
The smaller image?
Of the keys. of the keyboard?
Above the keyboard is E, F, G, A, B, C, D, E, F.
Right.
Black keys above it. So
correct.
What is the small? What's the small thing?
You see that it's a shorter width than the one on the right side that I'm referring to? The image on the right side above Bob Dobb's tiny note art, Zeitgeist, has a longer width. There's more keys shown in that one. Okay?
Right.
So look at the right one that has the longer width and start at G. Look for G. The lower G. There's two G's on there, but look for the lower G.
Okay, there's one G, capital letter.
Yeah.
And above it are the black keys with G's and F's and A's and G's.
Yeah.
Where is the lower G? What are you talking about?
There's, when you scan your eye, start at the left, starts at C, scan your eye to the right, there's first G there, and then keep scanning your eye to the right, and there's an octave up G.
Oh, okay.
Right, there's two G's.
Right.
Okay.
And what about those?
So go back to the first G and scan your eye going up. So G to A to B to C to D to E. Once you get to E, you can't go to F in the key of G. You have to go to F sharp.
No, wait, I didn't follow that. So we're at the G on the left, and then where did you say to go? Into the little black keys?
Go to the right. So
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yep, okay, but because we're in the key of G, we're not in the key of C, we have to follow the same ratios within a major scale, and those are whole, whole, half, whole, 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 half. So this is a lot of music theory. So G to A, because it skips a half step up at that G sharp, Bob, that's a whole step. That's a whole step. So if
what
I
is? The G sharp is a whole step?
Nope, the G to the A is a whole step.
Okay.
Okay?
How do you show a half step?
The G to G sharp is a half step.
Oh, it has a little line.
Yep.
It has a little line.
Yep.
There's an A above it.
Or it's an A flat, depending on what key you're in. Okay? So for our
So the black thing is between the letters. So that's a half step. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Breakthrough.
What?
I'm with you, Bob. I'm right with you. I'm right sitting right with you.
So I've been kind of going along the same lines of when we're taught musical theory, we're taught about the C major scale first. And I'm using going into G major scale to teach you about how we need to use a black key and then we need to use that F sharp in order to make the G major scale. So as we go over from G to A to B to C to D to E, that's do, re, mi, fa, sol, la. To get to T, we can't hit the white F, we have to hit the black F sharp. And then so is the G.
Above the F.
Correct. In between the F and G, the second G, there's an F sharp. Yep. And because of the way the major scale works, when we go back down to the first G, we make a whole step. So this is what I'm going to say about the major scale. It goes whole, whole, half, whole, 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 half.
So where do you see that? Where is this whole, whole, half stuff? On the chart?
So I have to say it like that because when I learned about a major scale, it just stuck into my head rhythmically. Whole, whole, half, whole, whole, half. Right? So that's why I had to say it like that. So the first whole step is from G to A because we skip the G sharp. The second whole step is from A to B because we skip the A sharp.
Why did you skip it?
Because of the way that the semitones sound to the ear. That's called a chromatic scale, not a C major scale or a major scale. So if you were to hear a chromatic scale, it would sound like da 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 da. Right? I'm not singing the normal do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. do.
Okay, listen.
Yep.
Heavy metal does not fucking follow this shit, right?
No, they don't. No, I mean, they do. I would say heavy metal does get pretty classical in some of its guitar playing and the more operatic
yes, they
voices.
Do.
So some of
okay,
those
so you, people players, sang this way 100 years ago. Okay, they learned this shit, and they would sing this do re mi nonsense, right? And they would know where they'd be. So, who started to mess with the acoustic space because the electric technology came in, the telephone and stuff? Is that ragtime or just
sure.
Joplin, or is it just jazz? Is that when it's
it
not following?
Let me ask this. But wait, Bob, before she answers that, let me just ask this: the chromatic scale. Is that what, like, Gregorian chants were based on?
No.
Oh, okay. Because it sounds like that flat.
They would have more dissonance. They would have more dissonance. Susanna, which has, like, you'd be singing the G with the D sharp at the same time before it resolves, so it creates tension. So there is some more dissonance, potentially, in Gregorian chant, but they don't necessarily follow a chromatic scale.
Okay, and then what was the other scale called that you say is the more like what we know, do re mi?
Major, just a normal major scale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay,
and
sorry, Bob. I interrupted.
Metal music, blues, Bob. Blues would have been the thing that, like old spirituals and stuff, like anything tribal or from like the, the European is a, they're not a, print-based society, they're oral.
Yeah.
So anything oral-based, like the spirituals or whatever, that wouldn't have been necessarily notated.
Yeah,
okay,
they don't have
question,
the visual media. They don't have the visual media. So they're going by intuition. By instinct, or memorizing the music.
Bulgarian choir, Alyssa? Does that fit into that?
Yeah, I love Bulgarian choir stuff. I mean, back in the day with like Coptic and stuff, I mean, I'm sure the minstrels, like some of the traveling minstrels and stuff, they would have had some notation. I just don't know. I don't know the history of when, like, you're right, Bob, the musical notation would have been a manuscript culture thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, where does Fa Sol La fit into here?
Well, yeah, Fa Sol La, okay, I can post the link. So, let's see.
So, as somebody who has, like, a tiny amount of super basic music, really, really basic music theory, when I looked at those Fa Sol La notation, it made zero sense to me. It's nothing like this classical notation.
Yeah, they have shape notes. They put shapes to the notes to essentially get your eye, hand-eye coordination, your vocal and eye coordination becomes noticing the ratio relationships between notes and not so much like when I'm looking at that thing on the treble clef, I know I'm singing the right frequency pitch. Like in classical choral music, like when, if we went and sang, which we did, I was in a choir and we sang in Norway in a cathedral, we wouldn't have any piano accompanying us. Somebody would have a pitch pipe. Ooh, and they would pitch it right. And then we would all get our note off of that. But the note that they were pitching was like perfect, you know, A equals 440, whatever hertz, whatever first note they needed to start on for that key. Say it was C or say it was E. So we had learned all of the notation in choir class in school. And then we were literally singing that same exact pitch and key in that cathedral. But the difference...
Without looking.
Right, without looking at anything. But the difference with Fa Sol La is that there'll still be a pitch. Fa Sol La Da Da! But it doesn't have to translate to what's on the page. It doesn't have to be like, we are specifically singing that proper E when the note is on the treble clef first line. Like, it just, like the E.
Why does it have to be perfect?
Because it's called a convenience key. So everything is pitched, like, for the people in the room. And so when you learn shape note singing for Fa Sol La, we do follow the music, but we may not, if you had a pitch pipe and we were singing Fa Sol La and one of the notes we had to sing was that E and you played a pitch pipe of E, they may not be the same E. Does that make sense? Mm. So we're following
the ratios.
But the ratios are proper. So the shapes, there's in Sacred Harp, there's four. There's a rectangle, a diamond, a circle, and a triangle. When those are on the treble clef or the bass clef, they're always written within the same ratios. So I'm looking at that, and I know, I see a jump from a fa to a la, and I know how that ratio sounds.
You know how far to go from where you started.
Right.
Yeah. And wherever you started is good enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what makes it so rich.
Anyway, so let me say this.
Sorry, muting.
So Alyssa, this visual stuff, was it because it was a way of bringing, I think that's what McLuhan said, that the book, The visual effects split the instruments off from song. So you started looking at the, working with the instruments. So then you get your geniuses of instruments. They would need to write stuff out to get coordinated in orchestras
right.
or groups.
Right.
So the writing comes in when you start to move out of the instinctive oral styling of just singing and you memorize those songs. If you've got to start bringing in flutes and whatever instruments they had, you've got to write this stuff out so people know
right.
what there are, it seems. It gets more
yeah.
complex. So this is for classical instrumentation. So you're in, you know, what Zappa called Penguins in Bondage, you know, for 300 years in Gutenberg, you're in this prison of print and notes and matching. So meanwhile, they bump into this Africa. They take their people over to America. And they put them in the plantations. But they get together in their little shacks, which turn into brothels. And everybody's just roaring in the brothel. They're just banging their instruments or something. And they're not reading music, you know. They're banging their whatever crude guitars they had or drums and wailing away. That must have looked like fucking animals. To the white literate people. You know
right.
what I mean? It must have been fucking shocking. These people wailing away and fucking at the same time. to the literate instrumental experts, the Jeffersons of Washington, it just would be crazy, right?
Right, and I suppose, too, you can think about the Vatican and the Latin Mass. The Mass would have been sung in the olden days, and a lot of those liturgical services would have been sung. So maybe some of the writing of that music kind of started with the church part of the print era as well.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right that that the blues and retrieving that tribal oral sense would have seemed totally wild. I mean, in the same way of when, similar way of when, and I wasn't around for it, but when Dylan went electric.
Yeah.
I mean, the folk vibe of all the acoustic stuff and everybody used to that coming off of their record player or radio, and then all of a sudden you get the location, that would have been a wild shift. So similar, yeah, to that difference.
Yeah, the folk guys, they learned orally, but it was within the print prison. It was proper what they sang, and it had meanings, working class meanings, I guess, you know, people meanings. And it was crude compared to the classical trained courts or middle class houses where the kids would learn piano and everything. So folky, where did folk come from? Pete Seeger kind of folk. That came out of the country music, right? And then, but then they also were listening to black people. So, folk was the first white letting their hair down and not being visual.
It came out of Appalachia, I think.
Yeah, Appalachia, yeah.
The folk, yeah.
I would say the folk music probably came from Shape Note, honestly, because Shape Note,
what's that? What's Shape Note?
The Fa Sol La.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because that came over in the 1700s. And the people in Appalachia and stuff, they would have probably had their, there's some like cool, like sort of spiritual voodoo vibes in Appalachia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And so I'm not really sure where that comes from. It's a good question for Ion. But the Shape Note.
I think it's the same roots. The Shape Note singing came from Appalachia too, because it came over when their ancestors came over, and they kind of stayed in a time bubble.
Yeah.
And it didn't evolve the music the way other music evolved in the country.
So in the Fa Sol La or Shape Note, they put you in the middle of an acoustic sphere.
Yes. Yes, it's
and
very different.
That had a big emotional effect on people, especially if they had a literate training. But those that didn't come out of literate training, just were in the slums of the white trash, they said the emotion of being in the middle. But that would be powerful for the middle-class girl who'd learned piano and is looking at something, all this eye stuff, and looking at a compliment. Also,
right.
Put in the middle of a resonating sphere, that would be quite shocking to them.
Right. You're right that it would be differently shocking if you were visually biased and dominant. But imagine, just personal opinion, imagine like the Native Americans when they do their powwows and their drum circles and they sing.
Their horrible music, which doesn't sound like it moves at all. Right?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Bob, I think, there's a lot to be said for being there.
Let me finish my...
If you were present...
No, listen, I'm just saying that, to me it sounds so ridiculous, but they have acoustic nuances going on.
Exactly.
Right?
So I would say...
I know that.
I would say when you're... So I've shown you pictures of the Fa Sol La, and you've probably seen some videos of people in it, and you're like, oh, it looks so boring. And, you know, and like the Native American thing, you probably think it's boring, you know. But if you were there, you might pick up on the astral plane vibrations that are happening, because if that Native American
person... Yeah, it's ESP music.
It is. It's
ESP. 100%.
And Shape Note has a similar quality where...
Yeah.
It's almost like, so Ion said that the Fa Sol La started with the Moabite.
Mm.
And so it's a pretty like close to, you know, the Canaanites or the,
Clathonites, you mean?
Yeah, thank you, Clathonites.
Yeah.
so it's this old thing, and they were tuned in like how they would do, the Native Americans would do a rain dance or a rain song and then ask for rain and rain would come.
Yeah, they weren't even in acoustic space. They were in tactile space, which included no difference between them and nature. So they were molding nature and singing nature and nature was singing back to them.
And I would say shape note is similar. Oh. When you say that somebody, when they have a print bias and they go in, they're like, holy shit, and they're rocked. But somebody that grew up in, with that, and this is just my opinion, surmising, that if you grew up that, in that, with Appalachia, you would still be affected by it because of that tactile experience of all these sound waves coming at your physical body. They've done studies, and when people are in the middle of the hollow square of Sacred Harp singing, their blood pressure decreases. And there's physical things that change in the meat sack body when you're in the middle.
Yeah. It's
even
like
if
RNA
you're not
drops.
In the middle, Alyssa,
it's
remember
like
when
RNA
I went
drops.
With you?
Hey, RNA
like
drops
RNA
is the fossil law of chemistry.
Yes.
Oh. But doesn't all music do that? It affects the physical.
Yeah.
If you immerse yourself in it.
It's different though, like
Well, this gets into what you're trying to do.
Well, specific frequencies do specific things.
It's a good line of questioning.
Now we get into your chart here. Your chart is taking frequencies of objects and the makeup of the quadrants. You're putting objects and bringing frequencies into it.
Yeah. So one time when I was talking to Ion, when we were breaking down the tiny note chart into like a new thing, whatever they're calling the completement of the big note.
Yeah.
I asked them, you know, what was F on the chart? And they said hadron. What was F sharp on the chart? Lockdown Bob rule, you know?
Wow.
So
you don't know why they assigned certain things to each section. You don't know that hadron was F sharp or whatever you said.
Yeah,
right?
Not
you don't
yet,
know why.
Not
though.
Yet.
Right.
Not yet. But when they are in this note, in this chart, they start to make, like my mind through the stages of apprehension wants to make some sense of it. So I can start pattern recognizing, oh look, lockdown Bob rule is F sharp. So every time that Bob's been, or that Ion's been talking about, you gotta move to F sharp. That's a frequency shift as it relates to lockdown Bob rule.
Right.
And the black keys are specific things that Ion said. So lockdown Bob rule is the first black key. Monad, which is Patsy Cline's Chronic Paranoia and Beatnik's Organization Man, that's G sharp or A flat.
Right.
And
according
then,
to Ion. Ion
according to Ion.
Category.
Yep,
yeah.
According to Ion. Ion would have probably noted all of the black keys as sharps, not as flats. So that's something that I need to ask him more about. Orchard Grove spirals because of the four stages of apprehension. That's A sharp. So to me, you know, you think about what's going on now. Lockdown Bob rule. Everybody who's lost in the Android meme tech body has a fucking paranoia. And then you see Beatnik's Organization Man, which is like, you know, like the pornographic version of trying to be organized, you know?
Yeah, right.
Fucking bureaucracy is falling apart. It's like, no, I'm not going to fucking wear a mask, you know? Like literally G sharp, A flat, probably A flat, is like everything we experienced with COVID, you know? That's
okay, hold it there, Alyssa. You're reminding me of what my thinking process was when I made the chart. I was thinking of shifts, and radio and then TV were frequency shifts. So that's why I put in all I knew about music was do, re, mi, fa, sol, la.
Right.
It's a frequency shift for that on the left side. I had do, re, mi, fa, sol, la. I was trying to show frequency change. So each environment, each medium had a frequency. So.
Yep.
You've got, you know, you get in the global membrane or the global theater with radio, TV, computers, and all the media, the clashing of the frequencies, and then that just creates a chaos and people stealing money on Wall Street who knew how to do it, stealing, you know, because no one was looking, they could use their computers and steal money. So you had that crazy 80s and 90s of maniacs becoming billionaires for no reason, right?
Right.
Hiding and running off and then forming hedge funds and more chaos that led to the frequency of Iondom. What is the frequency of Iondom? the hex added. I don't know what it is, but that's the question, right? Well, that's what I was pointing to. It's like the big note. Like, I think Zappa tries to get to that. His music is so incredible compared to previous pitch and timbre. He is trying to show an amazing and multi-environmental fucking implosion, or what I call lawnmower music. that's the effect of Ion. Ion comes in and crumbles everything.
Yeah.
Final crumbling.
And there's something about how, so as a piano player growing up, when I would learn music, I'd have to, you know, play all the white keys, you know, play C sharp or C major, which I showed you before. And if you play all the white keys, sometimes it sounds good. But as a kid, like a 3-4-year-old, I would just play all the black keys and everything sounded good together. So I could make music really easily in all the black keys. So there's something about the way the pentatonic scale harmonizes with itself from a frequency, like mathematical ratio perspective, that everything works together. So there's something about the pentatonic scale as it shifts me into the hexatic, it shifts me into like everything's harmonious. Like everything can work. I don't have to be stuck in a certain key. I can modulate up and shift into like everything works together. So there is something about what you're saying with the big note as it relates to why Ion makes such a big deal about the pentatonic scale. And there's gotta be something as it relates to the angles, how it synesthetically changes into trigonometry. Because the angles of a rhombic dodecahedron, the rhombic, the two triangles that make that rhombic face, that's specific. That's exactly specific in a rhombic dodecahedron. You can't shift that, make it wider, make it shorter. It has to be that way in order for everything to fit, to, face up together, right? To like line up.
And so, taking it a step further, on that line of thinking, when they said about cutting it in half and stacking it, that stacking space, if you look at illustrations of that, it actually forms in the center a way to create a wave, a tube of a wave of, so that's interesting. And then I just had the thought as you're talking about the pentatonic scale and the melding of frequencies in a harmonious way, that that could be a way to describe no time.
Well, how could you describe no time?
Because instead of the frequencies clashing, as you said, Bob, that you put the tiny note chart as a way of showing clashing frequencies that created chaos, the pentatonic scale shows harmonious, not just a position, but a merging of frequencies, and in that space, everything exists at the same time without causing friction. And I just thought, well, gosh, that's no time, because then everything is
even get access. You have a visual idea of merging, but you know what makes dissonance consonant, not irritating? If you can handle what sounds to be off notes, like in free jazz when Coltrane and them came along and just started blowing their saxes into noise levels, you got used to the noise, accepted it, so, you know, the negativity disappears.
Yes.
So it's not just a literal merging, so it's all pretty. You have to accept the negative noise as part of music. So
that would be contrast.
That
would be
the contrast.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not saying that doesn't exist in this a melding of frequencies. It's just that you're in a space where you're experiencing it all and selecting what you want. You know, it's a way of being in the vortex, if you will, of singularity.
Too many words there. It's Susanna.
Yeah, I can't follow your hypersubjectivity, but I dig where you're going. I know you're feeling it. You know, you're getting it.
Okay.
Can I try something? Because I haven't spoken about certain things that...
You need to show us, what is a, visually, what is a pentatonic scale? I don't know what that is.
Okay.
The black keys.
Yeah, all the black keys on that keyboard, all the sharps and, or the flats.
The black keys are the pentatonic scale?
A two and a three.
Yep, if you start, at F sharp and go F sharp, G sharp, A sharp, C sharp, D sharp, and that is those are the five notes, that's the appropriate, ratios for a pentatonic scale. It goes 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. So it goes
So you only play the black keys. You don't touch the white parts.
Well, you can play a pentatonic scale in the white keys, but the cool thing is that all of the black keys are automatically the pentatonic scale because there's those five right there, the first three and then the two. So remember when I was sharing the whole, whole, half? That's the steps of the major scale. The pentatonic scale is whole, whole, whole plus a half, whole, whole plus a half. So that's the relationship for the pentatonic scale in terms of the steps.
Well, what are the other names for other scales?
Oh yeah, there's so many.
There's a whole bunch.
Dorian, Ionian, yeah. I mean, think about like Indian music or, you know, they have even like timbres and pitches that are in between this Western chromatic scale where 8 equals 440 in the hertz. Like this is all like Western stuff. So then you've got, so
you said the chromatic. What's the chromatic scale as opposed to pentatonic?
Chromatic, so the chromatic scale would be starting at C and going to C sharp, all of the notes, you would play the half step walk ups. So chromatic scale is you're walking up a half step each time. So C to C sharp is a half step, C sharp to D is a half step, D to D sharp is a half step, E to F is a half step, see? Because it's not skipping any notes. It's not a whole step, it's a half. Those two white keys that against each other. Same with B to C, that's a half step. So a chromatic scale would be all the different half steps, just playing them all, you know, as you go up in a line.
You have this phrase, half step modulation, which Ian starts saying at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So I asked Neufeld, what's the fucking half-step modulation? He had never heard of it. He didn't know what it was.
Mm.
How do you learn that phrase, half-step modulation, since I'd never heard of it until Ion? What was he quoting? What system is that phrase used in?
Well, to modulate a key, like when a key changes, like some of the Vestal songs or something like that, like they'll sing in a song in a certain key, and then da 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 da, and then it'll go into this key to like give you like some more impact. That would be a modulation. And anytime the key can modulate up or down, so when you go up a key, like I just did, that's up, modulating up. Da da da, we modulated down. And generally, I don't necessarily know the music theory. Somebody can let me know or let us know. But a lot of times those modulations are half steps when they do that in a song. But I hadn't heard half step modulation in my music theory, but I knew what a half step was and I knew what modulation was. But Ian was the one that put it together.
Yeah, what do you think Ian means?
To me, it's like being 6 inches off the ground.
No, wait a minute. Why did Ian emphasize? So whenever music came up, he always befuddled the musicians by emphasizing half-step modulation. What do you think he was trying to point out?
Well,
6 inches off the ground.
What?
It's so close. It's a subtle frequency shift.
What is?
The half-step modulation. You're just shifting a little bit your frequency. It's what they mean when they say, you're 6 inches off the ground, let go. you know, heaven is right there. And then when they, so if you go from the whole C to the C sharp, it's a small, it's a half step jump, half a foot, 6 inches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah.
And everything's different. It's harmonious there. If you're going from the major to, or if you're going to the pentatonic scale, everything's automatically harmonious. You just have to make this little shift. That's how I've been interpreting it.
So, so he emphasizes half step to show the, tininess of ascension. It's just a shift.
So, isn't it literally going from, like, the space in between the two lines, moving a note from a space in between the two lines, to the next line next to it? That's the half step change?
Not necessarily on the treble clef. When you move from E to F, it is a half step modulation from that every good boy does find the E, the bottom horizontal line, to the first space. That is a half step. As you can see on the keyboard, there's no black key in between. So that is a half step right. relationship. But when you go from, F, which is the first space, to A, which is the second space, and that gets into the chart here too. So if you look at F on that keyboard in the top right of this first page on the keyboard, and you go up to A, and you go up to C, and you go up to E, you can see the word face. F-A-C-E. You see that? F on the keyboard, Bob. There's the F.
Yeah.
And then you can skip one and see A, skip one and see C, skip one and see E. But when you're skipping a white key, that means you're skipping F sharp, G, G sharp, and then getting to A. So even though it's one... skipping one line on the notation, Susanna, on the staff, it's skipping three tonal notes.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So,
it's not really.
So the F sharps,
but it's
G
a small sharps, modulation, though.
It's a.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's the. It is. It can be a whole step modulation sometimes when you do that, or a whole plus a half. And that's the thing too, Zion, you know, in the pentatonic scale, it's a whole step, whole step, whole step, whole plus a half, whole plus a half. So there is something about that. Half step modulation to me, Bob, like when I am lost in the Android meme and I don't know what I'm doing, but then I start talking to Bob and I take the drops and I engage Ion, that shifts me up a half step modulation.
Yeah, so I indicate in the chart
right.
that each quadrant was a subatomic particle and they're very tiny. So each quadrant is very tiny, so there's not much of a change between each quadrant. So I wanted to show subtle changes by the new electric variations from radio up to digital. So I actually was showing half-step modulation in my chart, but I didn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between
your
the quadrants.
Chart's very musical to me. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's a visualization of the acoustic and then the tactile. So that's the conflict that the chart gives you. You try to figure it out. But you're not able to hear it unless you made a video of it or something. So that was the trick of, okay, this, I'm going to show you what's going on, and you look at it, and there's very little visuality going on. Who the fuck's eating their dick? You know, you want to stop that?
Yeah, I think that was my phone doing something weird. I plugged it in, and it
okay.
went away.
Right. So so you look at the visualization of the Android meme and you're trying to visualize it. That's the wrong way to intuit or understand the Android meme. You don't use my chart.
Right, it's so, not complete to just use the chart visually.
Yeah, well, the chart is an anti-environment. You know, it's, okay, how do you visualize what can't be visualized? That's what physics is always problem with, is how to visualize the invisible and non-visible qualities of electric environments. So, and what their microscopes could see. So I said, look at this. Look at the phrase, hand signals for the blind. If you're blind, you can't see the hand signals. Okay? So I said, look at this book. I'm going to show you the hand signals for the blind. And most people are thrown by the idea and don't even notice that it can't be done. Right? So when they got to that point, wait a minute, I can't see your hand signals. And I said, yeah, you got to use ESP. So my book was a trick to flip you into your intuition or your ESP faculties.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the same analogy that Ion made with Carolyn, and that she couldn't hear physically, her ears had a hearing issue, and that she could hear better than everybody else.
Yeah. She can hear you fart. She can hear you fart.
So one last big insight I got from putting this chart together the other day was when Ion says in between the lines and spaces. So if you look on the left column, I've titled it lines and spaces. So you can see the first gray at the very top. So starting from the top going down this time. Okay. So on the chart it says line, and then in quotes I put every. So you can see those lines, every good boy does fine, going down. That's the same. Imagine taking this whole chart and turning it 90 degrees counterclockwise. Then it would be the keyboard. Right?
Be every good boy does fine horizontally.
Right. Yep. And so it would be these black keys that we see, the F sharp, G sharp, A sharp, that would be the keyboard. So you can see above it, I've put E. Above half step modulation, I've showed it starts at E, so that would be the E1, which is official state, second world. And then F is hadron, that would be up there. You can see it on the keyboard, okay? So getting back to the lines and spaces column, this is bringing in the musical notation with the long treble and bass clef lines and the spaces that we saw, the every good boy does fine and the F-A-C-E.
Yeah.
So Ion says, look between the lines and the spaces. The frickin' black key is what's in between. Because you see, the first one is line, every. The second one is a space, F. Then nothing is there for F sharp. Then we have a line for good, or G. Then nothing. So between the line and the space is the frickin' black key. So,
what's the line? What's a line?
The line is the every good boy does fine. If you scroll to the second page on the top, the treble clef, that first horizontal line, Bob, is the note E.
The line above the vertical? I'm not talking about the verticals.
No, the horizontal, the five lines on the where you put notes.
Remember the treble clef?
Yeah.
The notation? Those five lines, the first bottom line is E for every good boy does fine as you go up those lines.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the spaces are the white part.
Yes.
So,
on the
so you realize that lines and spaces is a, the manuscript, musical notation.
Right.
The bar, what do you call it? The bass, the staff or something? Staff?
The treble clef.
No, the whole thing. You call it a staff, I think.
Yes, a musical staff. There's a special word for the bracket that pulls those together. Yep. I can't think of it right now.
Well, what do you call the whole five lines and you're looking at it all? Five lines.
Staff.
Treble clef. Yep.
It's all treble clef, and then the one below is called
Bass clef.
Oh, okay. So there's two clefs.
But each of those has their own staff, right, Alyssa? The five lines is a staff.
Yep, the bottom line of the treble clef is not an E. and the bottom line, horizontal line on the, excuse me, the bottom line on the bass clef, if I don't know if I misspoke, the bottom line on the bass clef is not an E, but the bottom line on the treble clef staff is an E.
Okay, so what is F1?
That's showing that there's two Fs here that shows an octave. So I'm labeling it F1 because middle C is C4 as it relates to hertz. So I'm just showing that that F1 has a specific spot on the piano.
Yeah, and then over the right is the F 8 points later. That's F2.
Right, exactly.
I see.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, so I know there's other applications, like when Bob, you got shot, you know, there's lines and spaces, and I thought when Chad was translating his symbols into different worlds and he equated that to the frequencies, that was really good words about it. So there's more.
Who said that? Who said the good words?
Chad had great words in a tailgate when he was describing to, who was it, Maggie, was it you? About his symbols and how that works when he's shifting worlds.
Yes, but I am so happy you brought up Bob being shot because it's, oh my God, you just, this is so great. No, it's perfect. That's what I was thinking. Oh, so good.
That's
so good.
But why were you thinking
of that?
That's
the space. You were a half step modulation off, Bob, so they couldn't hit you. Or they hit some
right.
version of you, but it's not in this, in your world.
Right, and I live ahead of myself.
Away. Yeah.
I live ahead of myself. So when I was making the chart, I had synchrony as a concept there in 95. So I was looking at my own life and what I went through, and I was always a great dancer. So I was saying I danced my life, and, so when new environments happened, I tuned in and changed my dance, and that led me to different people. It's totally, whole life was ESP, or living ahead of myself and tuning in. That's why it's called decad dance. You could say I lived a life of decadence by not having a specialist job and all the proper stuff. But I went through the decades in a dance.
Mm-hmm.
So the actions of my body, then I added, knowing I wasn't just a chemical body, I added the other bodies. So the dance of all my bodies is what I started 1960, say, go to 1990. And that dance was the effects of ion before we got to ion.
Yeah.
That's the autobiographical part of my chart. But because I insisted it wasn't about me particularly, I was an artist tuning into the environments and part of social mortar, then what I was showing was the effect on my dance. And language became these different media environments.
Yeah.
So that's what it's showing.
Yeah. Hmm.
So here's another question, because one thing, another point that Ion has made in the past referring to lines and spaces, it's
okay.
about standards and something, I can't remember
fingers,
the other word.
Fingers
and standards, yes. So how does that apply, you think, to this? Fingers and standards usually it's usually in reference to popular music.
Hmm. Those are the archetypes. Those are the archetypes. They're the Esperanto. The thing
ground.
That holds people together. Yeah, like you.
Figure ground.
Because
yeah, like,
the other thing they
There's
said
a, like,
about
standards people is become like, famous, mainstream fame. Madonna is one of these cases, right? It's all artificially designed, you could say, but it is still, you can't impose fame on people, though a lot of the industry does it, and that's crap music, it's just business, but there's always someone who shows up, like a Dylan or an Elvis, that communicates across something. And that you can't force that on people. The dance of Elvis and the music and frequencies he expressed communicated to the frequencies of the 50s kids which they were being molded by the environments to respond to that frequency. And someone shows up. So those are the figures and standards, what we're calling the archetypes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And does that, for example, does Elvis represent a half-step modulation change in the taste
from,
of music?
From Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra to Elvis. Frank didn't like Elvis at the beginning. You know, he said, what the hell is this? But he didn't know from the 40s to the 50s, a 10-year period, there was a whole bunch of massage of technological environments happening on people, which was changing the kids who were going to respond to the present more than their parents. So Frank was like the parents, disgusted at Elvis. And then Elvis didn't like the Beatles. And then the Beatles didn't like whatever, you know, Phil Collins or disco or punk or something. It happens every time.
Yeah, it's a great connection to the mediacology and the archetypes and the myths. The thing that that really stood out to me about the singers and standards is they used Carolyn's Stomping Down Hell Hill example as setting a standard. So.
Oh yeah, that's what I wanted to mention. Yeah. So. Well, I think I'm going to say what you're going to say. Listen to this. This is what you're leading to. I was going to bring in the role of Carolyn. So I had Carolyn. Okay, there was an R. Crumb cartoon in the late 60s where the young guy and his girlfriend are walking along. And the guy is talking metaphysical, abstract thought. And the girl is trying to figure out what to make for supper, right? So for me, I'd be thinking all this shit, reading McLuhan, and Carolyn wouldn't do it. She'd be thinking about what the fucking food to make. And so she made food, or what Shannon found out, she was the healer of the body, and I was making mind-mortar stuff, so I was the healer of the mind. So our relationship was a multi-level genius version of that cartoon, because I wasn't just doing stupid book male man explaining. I was doing all kinds of modalities, and Carolyn wasn't just working with recipes. She was working with bodies and all her body knowledge, and it led to the D cell and then Mir and then ion products. But I was always dancing with Carolyn, and she was, being the ground, the one who, she was a great dancer herself. And, so she controlled my dance. And it ended up with Iandom. That's what the chart was trying to show, how Carolyn was off the chart. She was in the hexatic position. So she was controlling everything or influencing everything I was interested in. And everything I was doing was influencing her, but we didn't realize it till we get into Ayanda. You know what I mean? Well, because when we got to, New York, we were by ourselves, so we had to get to know each other on some level, and it was around the big mission of Mir. But that was just an anticipation of what would happen with getting alone in Maui, and then making this great alchemy with Ion. See, so I'm thinking about my dance was dancing with Carolyn. That was our dance. So what were you going to say?
Well,
Ion
harmonized it.
No, yeah, Ion brought it to
the pentatonic. He
showed what we were doing. He said, you spent 40 fucking years looking for something. Yeah, and we had a great time for the 40 years. But he said you could have done it in Seattle in 69. And Carolyn and I were talking about the other day. We went out to Seattle, and we're ready to sort of help Western them do their revolution. But they were all sort of nutty and eccentric and arguing among themselves. So the revolution wasn't there for us to work with. So we were talking about how people went through a identity crisis. We never had any identity crisis. We always thought we were ready for whatever was fucking had to be done. It's the fucking 50s.
Yeah, but
we had a huge superiority complex. And we were reasonably nice people, so we didn't lord it over, but we were always waiting for the revolution. So we would go to each revolution, to McLuhan, Zappa, Worcester, Thompson, to see if they're ready to take advantage of us, and nobody did. until we got
well,
to
I feel like you were waiting for the pentatonic scale. What you were doing wasn't tied together until Ion introduced the pentatonic, and then you had a ground that tied you together, like it creates this harmony where your stuff makes sense.
Well, what is the pentatonic scale? What is the pentatonic scale you're talking about that Ion did?
It's a frequency shift. It introduced, it's like in between, so everybody else is on this other scale, the major scale that Alyssa sang for us. And that's what everybody was functioning on. And you and Carolyn were, you're a step off, a half step off.
Yeah.
And you're on your own. And then Ion comes in and makes the pentatonic, like, it's overlaid over everything, which is busting everything else apart at the same time as it's cohering you and Carolyn and everyone who's working with you.
I don't know why you're calling it pentatonic. It's just a scale or a bunch of frequencies or something.
To ask Alyssa if what I just said makes sense to her, because she's the one with the more sense of this, better sense.
Yeah, why use the term pentatonic?
Because it's a different scale. It's like a different snow globe. You're on a different...
Yeah. Well, Ion's on a different scale. They just call it a different scale.
The one you're on. So it's going to bring you, your shit together in harmony at the same time as it breaks everything else up.
Yeah.
Because they don't match.
Why call it, what is it, the Black Keys?
Because that's what it, yeah.
I mean,
I may be way.
Lockdown Bob Rule is literally F sharp. So.
It's
because
on the
Ion said it was.
Scale.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there is a pentatonic scale. It's a particular scale. And Ion
and
is
that's where you're
that.
Functioning. That's where you're
and
functioning.
And we've identified that they're the Black Keys, and then Alyssa just further identified that those Black Keys are in between the lines and spaces, and you had defined that that's tactility. So that's where you are.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
that's
what,
where you are. I've
seen critics say that Frank Zappa seems to play mainly in the pentatonic scale, so I thought that was interesting in light of what you're saying. If we're in the pentatonic scale and I can only sing Zappa stuff, whatever he's doing, it may not be literally pentatonic scale as Alyssa showed us. It might be the mystery note, the big note.
It is the pentatonic scale though a lot because.
Well, he named it that way. He told you these categories here, right? He said, and that's the pentatonic scale in particular.
But see, Bob, Ion came in and now they're the new ground. So everybody who's just playing on the white keys doesn't have any ground anymore. That's why you're winning.
Yeah. Yeah. So where is playing on the white spaces, the white keys? Where is that? You know, white man. The literate people or, you know, the literate hierarchy that's
You see on the chart that the E white key is official state, the F white key is hadron, the G white key is mythic government, A is lofty because of graviton, B, you should see all the white keys that I'm listed there on the chart.
All the shit that's falling apart is white keys, Bob.
So Alyssa, when Ion does that ridiculous changing the angle of the chart and then starts making connections across on an angle, you know, that stupid stuff that I don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they start making connections, they're connecting it like this, pentatonically.
Probably, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. They also talk about grinding up the chart in different, you know, consistencies. They talk about pivoting in, you know, kind of like a Rubik's Cube, how the chart,
right.
it'd be a good idea to think about the chart like a Rubik's Cube. And each of the faces of the Rubik's Cube, the color is like a little tile of, you know, breaking up the section of the chart. And you can shift around and have different things and all that stuff, but evidently there's something about getting all the colors kind of lined up in terms of knowing where you are, knowing how to navigate, knowing, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the black keys, yeah.
Okay, this great book by Lewis I'm reading, Men Without Art, 1934. Halfway through the book, he starts off talking about he gets to a chapter describing what real satire is and what a real artist does. But listen to the first paragraph. Some people suffer fools gladly. Some frown and sneer upon them or turn loftily away. Then Lewis says for himself, he says, I respond to the fool after the former fashion, which is you suffer them gladly. I take the fool for granted. I suffer easily the fool. He's not frowning or sneering on them. If I were a great teacher, I should probably boom at my disciples, quote, suffer all fools to come unto me, unquote, and should sit for hours listening to the prattle of a fool or gazing into his opaque and empty eyes and watching for his dumb tongue to stammer forth some choice inanity. Then he says, but this is extremely unusual. I said, holy shit, that's exactly what I did the last 80 years. I fucking listened to the prattle of fools like yourselves and paid attention. This is by technique. And so
yeah.
I would not use my... So someone on the chat line, the cheap hardware came in, and he listened for a few hours, and he seemed to be paying attention. Then he said, okay, I've got to go back and listen to the archives. I'll return after I do that, and then maybe I can talk on the phone. So,
in 10 years.
That's a sincere newbie. Okay, I'm looking at these charts, and I'm going to encounter someone on the beach tomorrow, some fucking fool, and I'll pay attention to him, which is always what I did anyways. So I call that, you know, a slack evolved way of handling reality. So I'm not getting fucked up by judgments.
Yeah.
So then doing that anyways, I also tuned into the ones who were really great fools, like Zappa and McLuhan and them, right? They were the best of the fools. So I did that. And so I would not use this chart. I will not go through whatever, mental patterns that Chad and I object to that Ian's always laying out, new patterns to entertain you. But I can see that a new person comes in here and they can't adapt. They can't accept us right away. They got to figure out what they are, what they were, how much they're going to give up, how much they're going to adapt, how much they're going to merge or block. And so that learning phase, which in the five symbols from cosmic awareness is the triangle of self-awareness with dust coming out of the top, which is kind of like a schizophrenic process you go through, engaging ion. That's what that cheap guy was saying. I got to go away, and he might listen to the tape of this thing and work out what the hell Alyssa's saying and the different quadrants and become an expert on taking my chart and making it 90 degrees angle and working out and liking what Ian tells, because that's their learning phase, right? So this stuff is for newbies. It's not for me. I'm dealing with, I don't know what you call it. I'm the principal in the office, you know. I got to deal with the fucking complaining parents and stuff.
You correct.
Yeah, I correct. So I'm explaining how I'm indifferent to doing this because I already know how to do this. I've already been doing it. But I'm explaining why a newbie might find this really interesting. Organizing of the music scales and what Alyssa's showing here.
Yeah, you already do it naturally, and what Alyssa's done is give us a reference point, a framework to appreciate what's happening. I think I got it in some other ways, but this is really cool what she's done. Very, very neat.
Yeah. That's the first time. I've always wanted someone to teach me music, and I never had a chance. So, you know, the written part. So we finally got it done today. What is this? April 16th must be an important day. We got the main, we got the basic points of what we're looking at when you look at a manuscript of music, visual space. So it was very well laid out by Alyssa.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, Alyssa was a teacher. You actually do teach.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Thank you, Alyssa. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, my God, this woman got up, woke up, put on her glasses, and launched into teaching mode, like, immediately. I was so impressed. I couldn't have done that.
That's right. Well, you're more kinetic.
In Vietnam, we would have had a game to go with it, though. We would have played basketball.
Is that right? You would have played basketball while doing it?
We often taught through games.
So the, you know, when I read that Zappa, he went to music school. Okay, so he basically gets kicked out of high school. In grade 12, he didn't really, get good marks. But they gave him a passing grade to get him out of the school because he was so disruptive, his charisma or whatever. So he didn't do anything. I think he met his girlfriend, Kay Sherman, and they got married. They're 18 or 19. So he might have worked, but no, maybe he didn't. Before he eventually, after a year or so, decides to go to college. It's the only way he's going to get laid. He recognizes, I ain't anybody after high school, and everybody's gone to the college, and I'm not getting laid. I got to go to college. So he took music, and so he says he sat in school for like a few months, and there was an instruction, a famous instruction book, and he started looking at it, and it was telling him how to play music, you know, with the basic literate rules of whatever the rules are when you learn music in college in the first year. So he said after a few months, he just threw the book away and he just started, being a lounge lizard, you know, going, get a lounge band together and playing pop music in the bars. But all the time he had a natural mind force going. So he was reading musical theory and, listening to every kind of fucking music that he could have. So he was learning faster than he would in college, but he threw the book away. I always thought that was interesting. So I knew there was a lot of good music. I didn't need to know what the book was. But I would have liked at some point to learn what we learned today. Just give me the basics of what the fuck you guys are looking at. So finally got my music lesson. 101 years old, took a long time to get one.
And me Bert, too. Bert Thank you. Deal I learned that.
Yeah, Bert got a big deal.
Can you hear my phone? Bert static,
is Bert still there? Is Bert still there?
Someone is staticky or clicking. Is that
you? Oh, he's on mute. They're all muted. Okay, I'll unmute.
Oh, no.
Susanna, my phone is staticky, so I'm going to go on the different phone. I've never had a phone do this before, so I'm going
to... Okay. It's reacting to the frequency.
It's not too bad, right? Alyssa.
Hello.
It's really bad for me. I'm going
to... Here, just listen to this before you go. You're going to be gone a minute. So, Bert, you finally got your music lesson for fuck's sake.
Yes. Yes, it was great. I mean, I learned so much, man. And it'd be fun to re-review that. But I got slaughtered or abused as far as not getting that basic information.
Yeah.
I do not
and
remember
I never had it
at
either.
All. Yeah.
Well, okay, I had it, Bert, but I didn't get it until Alyssa laid it out that way. So you weren't really at a disadvantage.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, I was like, wow. Because I've heard treble clef. I know what it looks like, but
the application, she laid it out. She really did. She's a great teacher. Great teacher.
She is. I mean, yeah, because I was never able to put the lines and spaces together with the musical notation until Alyssa did it. Mm-hmm. So that was all her.
I learned how to play piano by ear and guitar by ear. I never learned how to read notes because of that, with that, you know, that basic training. I never got that.
And so it's very simple what we learned, but you had to get someone that had to take the time and you had to be ready.
Yes.
Late enough to just go through an hour following it step by step.
But Bobby had to
face do that, it. She had to turn it. It's the turning of, like the Rubik's Cube. She had to turn it 90 degrees. To see how it lines up. That's something that most people would never have done.
But then Bob, with his questions, put the perfect question and made it more complicated, like heavy metal doesn't do this. And you're like, yeah, like how the fuck do they do music then? You know?
Yeah, yeah. How do they match up? I'm always amazed at these. I just noticed through the years that a lot of juvenile delinquent kind of kids who couldn't do anything in school were fucking incredible with music. You know, they had good memories. And I didn't know these guys. What the fuck are these weird people who are so social fucking misfits, but they're incredible and they know songs. They know how to fucking play together for a lot of songs. How the hell they learned that? I don't even remember the notes. I'm always amazed at any musicians that are playing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just think, but then that put on the, to overlay that even more, think about how Zappa wrote music and all of his musicians had to know it, but then at the same time they memorize it and then they rehearse so much that they could change a song for the next gig.
Yeah. They knew how to add and adapt. Incredible.
Yeah.
Now, he was all creativity seems to be channeling. He's always hearing music in his head. You know, it's like fucking, he'll be hearing Ion talk in his head. I don't know how much it was at first because he was unconscious, but it's a kind of channeling, or a popular metaphor now. Since we're just kind of disembodied, the astral plane is pop culture now, though channeling is a cliche term. But, the geniuses, they have stuff coming through them. You know what I mean? It's talking to them. And they just write it out. So he's there, had this stuff happening. When I played that song by Jesse Belvin, Guess Who? It's the first song he heard on the car radio, let's say when he was 13 or 14. And he liked it. And so it attracted him to music because before that, he was a chemist blowing things up. You know, he would mix with his chemistry bullshit, whatever you got back then, your chemical boxes. And he blew up the toilet in school, you know, like grade 7 or something. So he was blowing, being creative with chemistry before music hit him. And then he heard the song, and he liked it, and then he started listening just to other stuff, and then he was attracted to the R&B stuff, and then he got a Berez album. And that was weird, post-Mozart stuff. He didn't like the Mozart thing, but he liked the electronic music of Perez and those guys from the 20s, 30s. So then he was ready to start thinking about it and wanting to be a composer right away. So he had the ground of being a performer right already in him.
Yeah.
Because he was doing puppet plays for his friends in school. So you have these kids, maybe like Alyssa, she's as a kid is channeling, but very limited in a middle class framework, but you're interested in it and you paint or you make music and you can sing and you perform, you learn the shit. It's interesting, artistic talent the way it is in people.
Yes.
Like you, were you a musician, Bert? Is that what you're saying?
I know. I had a very musical family, and I started trying to play the trombone, but, like, I got lost with the notes.
Yeah.
And then the trombone just irritated my lips and blowing it. But then I went and played guitar. I took some guitar lessons, and then I started playing guitar by ear, and I played bass. But then when sports came in, I dropped the instruments and went and became a jock.
Yeah, a big factor in a kid's life is they do something and other people like it. So then they think they're that. So when I was very young, my friend said I was a good dancer. So, okay, I'm a dancer. And I wanted to dance, and then the band would be playing. This is jazz, swinging that in the 30s and 40s. That looked like work to me. So I was so glad I was a dancer, you know, not a fucking musician who could. They didn't get to dance. They had to fucking perform or work. So that didn't look cool. But sometimes I wish that I had hadn't been told I was a good dancer, and learned how to play an instrument. Because I'd love to be able to fucking get up there and do what Frank does.
Mm-hmm.
You know. That'd be so much fun. So I missed the whole musical thing. And also I became a jock too. Because I was good at it. So people said, no, you're good. You're an athlete. So as a kid, you form your fucking identity around stupid social mortar that society lays on you.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Bob, learning how to play an instrument would have not made you a Zappa, because what he did involved a lot more than being able to play an instrument.
That's right. No, but I would like to be able to get up there and wail.
Can you just check to make sure to see if Alyssa's muted? She had to hang up and call in again.
Oh yeah, right, yeah. But that's what society does. You can see the little kid who can't do nothing, then it turns out it's valuable that they can do mathematics, so they fucking become a nerd, you know? And then the other kid, can't do math, but they're good at craft work, so they become a carpenter. And this specialist modality from earlier agricultural societies is a microcosm in school in the last 150 years. The kids were given specialist roles, you know?
Yeah.
So what I find unique about millennials today is that the guys and girls can do anything. They're jocks, they're musicians, or the education system allowed them, it may be because they allowed bird courses more. Nice.
Bird courses.
That's what they were called.
Yeah.
These kids don't learn bird, B-I-R-D. They don't learn math and history and chemistry. They learn fucking guitar or something. The stupid stuff that schools did not allow to be taught wasn't serious in the 50s and 60s, I noticed. And you ask a kid today, what do they take in high school? You don't even know what they mean. I take gender studies or something, you know? I study where women. But they are given
actually, they've gotten rid of music education in the schools, Bob.
Yeah, I know. But they somehow, in some schools, teach kids this
because
stuff.
It's
maybe
not a bird
private
course.
School. Well, in the private schools, they kept some of those old disciplines going. Not in the popular schools.
Yeah.
So the popular schools, they're fucking idiotic rap people. Okay, hip-hop, grunting. Like Karen was looking at Nardwar's interacting with the rappers, and he was telling them about their, you know, 5 years old and what they were doing, and they were shocked that he had done his research and knew what they were doing in high school, if you watch that thing. But what Carol was, she was trying to say, you know, they were talking to these black, and she goes, assholes! They're all assholes! And I said, yeah, it's Captain Beefheart and the Grunt people. These black rappers, they can't fucking talk in a white, articulate way. They grunt. They fucking imprecise. They don't know what they're saying.
They think it's cool not to.
I know. They're encouraged by their fucking mortar to be that way. They get complimented for being incomprehensible and not even completing. They're worse than Biden. They don't complete their syllables. Or Biden is a rapper. He's a rapper president.
You're low.
I'm
real low.
Who's that? Who's talking?
Sound like Madeline.
Yeah, you fucked your phone up there, Madeline.
Biden's not real. He worked from the satellite. He's just an answering machine for the American presidency.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But the, but I'm impressed with the, young people. Okay, but here's what's weird. I was impressed from the 90s on at the young 18-year-old girl. She could do sport. She could do music. She could do everything. Right? And she was not really a girl in the old sense. She was, unisexual. But I did notice once the digital came in and then the texting took over that the 18-year-olds are not so attractive. They're so fucking stuck in their chip body, they're irritating. They don't expect any chemical body social interaction. To meet them, you have to meet them online, apparently, right?
They don't, and they resent it. They resent chemical body interaction. It's an interruption.
Yeah, yeah. So... They were more balanced than the Generation X people, I guess, and then whatever came after them, before the millennials.
Me.
Were balanced.
Generation Y. That's me.
Well, like you're like that, Alyssa. You came in slightly before the computers, or, you know, you weren't so digitized.
Yep. Yeah, what year were you born?
83?
In little man terms, 1985.
Right, so...
In little man terms, nice.
Yeah, so the digital isn't
nice.
Until you're 15, you know? The digital isn't until you're 15 for you.
Right, yep.
So you were the more...
Thanks, Susanna,
the
by the way.
What did they call you guys? What were you? What generation were you?
Well,
millennial,
I think,
right?
Yeah, I think they... I don't identify as much as a millennial because I met you.
You're early millennial.
Know?
You're early millennial. This is later millennial.
I identify as Generation Y. So after X, but before millennial. Like this little micro genre. Yeah.
Yeah. Y1 and then there's Y2.
85. So what year, Alyssa, do you think millennial starts?
Oh, I've
seen it. It starts in the '80s.
Yeah, I've seen it start even like at like 83 or 81 or
yeah.
something like crazy
but,
like that.
But when I wrote Up the Urbiganti in 95, I defined the liberated generation as the Morpheus generation, and they were born 89, 90, 91, so they grew up in the post-Cold War. They didn't have that psychic tension, that binary dialectic, the duality of the Cold War. So I thought that they'd be more free in some way. And so they are, but then the Android meme and the chip body overdid it on them, especially the post-millennials.
It did.
So
I
undo that satire, very funny satire of the millennial or the young kid comes to the job. Was it Ian? And he says, you know, they come to be interviewed and they start arguing with the guy interviewing him, the interviewer for the job doesn't know what he's fucking talking about. You know, the arrogance of the 19-year-old today. Remember, did you hear that? Ian did that as satire, didn't he, today? I heard it.
I didn't hear that.
Yes, and one of the things they said was Gen X is the generation that fixed all the shit, and I was like, what? What does that mean?
Yeah,
I'm
the generation
Gen X. I'd love to take
shit.
Credit, but what the hell did they mean?
Yeah, they fixed something, you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm
but what I find
something.
Weird, like, the millennial people that I know or knew working with them was they seemed more free and more open, but then as time went on, eventually I realized they're actually more inflexible in some ways. I don't know if I can nail that down, but they're more stuck than I think I am.
Yeah, McLuhan laid it out first. This was original. He said, rigid youth and flexible elders. That would be his generation, the radio era, the greatest generation. You know, Tom Brokaw wrote the book, the people who went through World War II. They say they're the greatest generation because they had to deal with a lot of change from the 40s up to now. and you know, most of them fucking died through it, but they had to deal with their kids rebelling against war in Vietnam. They had to deal with everything else, women's lib. So they went through a lot of shocks. So they became flexible elders. But their youth were rigid. But everybody projected 80 years ago the cliches that youth are exploratory and flexible and parents are rigid. That's true in the 19th century, but not in the middle 20th century. It flipped. So I noted McLuhan saying that. That was original. No one said that youth were rigid. They said they're adventurous, exploratory.
Then it became that way.
Yes. So here's what happened, is that the parents were flexible, and every generation since then, the parents have to become flexible because they can't be a parent anymore. There's too many media, and the media run the kids. But the media that runs the kids makes rigid youth in whatever areas that the media gets them. And now they're so fucking rigid, they don't like the chemical world, the chemical body world.
They hate everything. And what I've noted is the millennials, I don't know about the ones after them, but the millennials, a lot of the ones I know, have gotten lost in drugs and literal, like, serious clinical insanity. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you know that you could say Generation X, they grew up in the 70s and 80s, and in the great rock and roll swindle, the movie that Malcolm McDowell made about the Sex Pistols, it has a bunch of old hippies who are running the record industry. They don't like the young punks. And so you see the rigidity of the boomers. They're into the Beatles and whatever that meant. But I think I had another idea. I forget what I was going to say about that. But the... the Generation X, the Pistols and those guys are saying the boomers did everything. They had all the revolutions of the 50s and 60s, and there was nothing more for Generation X to do. So I felt sorry for the Generation Xers. They couldn't do anything, have an identity out of whatever revolutionary stuff the baby boomers did. But they could be what Ian says. They fixed things because they had nothing to do, so they actually became a little more relaxed and detached before the digital, which then creates a new extremism. They're in between the boomers and the millennials, and they are a little more balanced, maybe, because they couldn't get anything to identify with.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I can see that, because Matt, my boyfriend, he was born in 73. So I can see that in our interaction where, I mean, I've been saved because I've come here, but he does have a natural balance and kind of like, wow, like, I feel like the millennials get so restless, they get so confused, they get so like attached to something, and
they're brittle.
And yeah, and I can see how he's got a little bit more stability just inherently from his sensorium. And yeah, that's totally, thanks for putting words to that. I can see that.
Yeah, now to add this.
Yeah, it's funny how the stability derives from flexibility, though. It's like,
wait a minute. Listen, the disservice of Generation X is that they are depressive. They never got excited too much about everything. So when I was at CKLN and dealing with Neufeld, these younger Generation X guys, or late boomers, I seem to be a guy on speed, because I was not depressed by growing up in the 70s and 80s. I had the energy of the whole first half of the 20th century, you know, and I was involved in so much, I was excited and excitable. And so I felt bad about Doug Nicholson and these younger guys who were filling with Mike Dyer, as co-hosts on the show, because they, never really let go. They were cautious about everything because everything had been done. So they had a depressive mode. And so if you're that, Maggie, you and others, like you tend to You have to struggle with getting depressed.
That's true, because if it's true that everything's been done, okay, it's all been done, yeah. And look at how fucked up it is. Like, there's nothing else to do, and it's just fucked up. Like, that's depressing.
Yeah, you have nothing to look forward to.
Until you came along. Now I do.
That's right, yeah, I saw
another one that's
coming. But
you don't think I'm saved, but relatively speaking, I think I'm saved.
Right, no, but the baby boomers, they had the excitement of trying everything out, and the old joke is, whatever happened to them, they thought it was the first time in the history of humanity it ever happened, right? So they would have
yeah, we watched them fail at all of it.
I got divorced. Holy fuck. And they have courses and workshops. How to
yeah, it's freedom. Woo! You can get divorced. You can remarry.
Yeah, but they were...
Take your
paw
off.
That's right. Yeah. And they found out, what? They've been divorcing for 100 fucking years, you know? And never heard about it. It was covered up after World War II. It was this whole 50s trying to be perfect kind of thing. Something that the baby boomers grew up with. And they didn't know their parents were such assholes and wrecks and liars and weren't actually that happy. They'd been married a few times, but they didn't tell their kids.
They saw Leave It to Beaver and thought that's how it was. That's just
What was the pressure to be perfect? What was going on in that generation?
World War II, where everything was fucked up.
They were on stage. No one grew up watching themselves on TV shows about themselves. That's what happened to Disney did that. Disney killed everybody.
Forward.
But by all those Mouseketeers. I mean, no generation.
Wait.
It's the radio world.
What are you saying, Bob?
I'm saying TV. That for kids that grow up, they're hyper self-conscious because there's TV shows about what they're doing. Dennis the Menace. They didn't have that. I don't know what they had in the 20s and 30s. I don't remember that. I don't think there was any radio for kids. The kids didn't have radio. Do you know what I mean?
So you're saying the boomer generation wanted to be perfect because they saw their reflection in the
stage.
Media?
Yeah.
Right.
It was the first time they were made very self-conscious. And that
made they had
a little more
idealistic. Mirror.
Yeah, and that made them more idealistic or to think about themselves, whereas the generation that I grew up, they didn't think about themselves. They had no self-awareness at all about anything, right? They just went to war, or they did this, and they worked in their factories, and were robots. And you know,
Bob,
it was
also Vatican
Bob,
censor and religion censorship. Vatican and religious censorship.
Religion was a big deal.
Council of Nicaea. Yeah.
So the,
because there's so many movies and books and magazines that were put on a list, at least from the Catholics, for Catholics, that they couldn't go watch. It would be a sin if you read that book or saw that movie. And
that control is lost when you can bring TV into the home. You're bringing magazine, movies, and radio into the home via TV, and the church couldn't control that. They couldn't control the effect of Disney on people. So Disney was the Karl Marx of the 20th century. He wrecked
Well, my dad was a depression baby.
What?
And I guess, and my mom, like, my parents were boomers.
Some
and
Catholics. Like they go, what?
And the stuff that they would not let us see movies or watch TV, like, or they would watch it with us. I remember we watched Laurel and Hardy every weekend with popcorn, and that was pretty much it. That's what we were allowed to do.
Yeah. But look, okay, so as the media, so Generation X got over-mediated. They had nothing to do in the 70s but to watch TV and all that. And Stang seemed to be part of it. And they get into cartoons like Greg Duffel, the fucking ant. They're experts on ridiculous children's shows or teenage shows. You know what I mean? They really know their shows. And that's all, that's what they lived. They lived in suburban TV more than the baby boomers did.
Yeah, I
would
say that
more
Matt
programming.
Said Gen X can't let themselves go, that depressive thing. Matt doesn't have that depressive thing as much, but I see that the way that he lets himself go is by channeling some cartoon that he watched. So, right, so like, right. he'll kind of spaz out or something, like kind of like break the mold, so to speak, and it'll be like some quote from some Ren and Stimpy or like, you know, whatever, like,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, so he's using that to channel his like ability to let go versus just doing it on his own.
That's his
Ren and Stimpy is profoundly dark. Have you watched much of it?
Yeah, it so is. South Park.
No,
holy shit.
No, I haven't watched that.
Oh my god.
No, South Park too, and Simpsons a little bit. Simpsons sort of brought
right.
in the cynicism. But the it's important what we were just saying there. What did I just say a minute ago? I yelled out something about, media. So, the growing of the bodies. You see, when the digital comes in, then you fragment the TV landscape into a body as you begin to experience the chip landscape, which is later going to become a body. So Generation X starts to have a media body, a TV
mm-hmm.
landscape body, and that's an important part of themselves. It's a body. So Matt is quoting from his TV body all the time. That's the cartoon yep. stuff. And so you got the millennials are quoting from the TV body and maybe more of the chip body. And they're like Clinton. They've got a million fucking programs or discussion groups or Facebook pages or something that they've lived through. You know what I mean? Many, many
yeah.
different phases of the chip body experience if you grew up with it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad yeah. I went to Vietnam. Oh my god. Like, if I hadn't
because
done
they don't
that,
have because they don't have the media immersion there? Is that why?
Well, it shed me from a lot of my, like, it dipped me in like a different water, right? So like it changed my sensorium alchemy so much that mm-hmm. when I interact with people my generation now back in the States, I can't relate as much. Like, I used to be so in that hypersubjectivity where I could, you know, kind of go there, but I don't have it anymore, and I'm so glad I don't, because like you're saying with Clinton, like, it just feels heavy. It feels like a lot. It's just, and just kind of get lost in your words more, like maybe Minimax or, you know, sometimes you just kind of get in that rabbit hole, right?
Yeah, he talks.
So many
he talks,
references.
Don't even fucking, that's right. Yeah, he talks without really saying anything. That, he forgot to have an anchor to what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Tons of fancy words. It's all this hot air.
Yeah. Yeah, he and Clinton are similar that way.
No, it's
you have to bring
masturbatory.
So
Clinton,
he writes these columns, you know, he got discovered by this girl. So he writes this media, and it's so bad, the way he writes, it's so fucking ridiculous, he's all over the place. So I would call him up and run through it with him. We even did it on office hours a couple of times, and he's half embarrassed about how ridiculous what he wrote is, and he hadn't realized it.
Yeah. I think he doesn't like your Miss Brooks role. I don't think he kind of gets irritated when
yeah.
you give him the positive feedback to try to help him. He gets irritated, but he's
well,
so proud of all the words.
He claims to like it. He claims to like it.
Well,
but yeah, I think it's hard.
The words, see, that's how you get paid, is per word as a journalist
yeah.
and even as
a
scholar. Mm. Like,
sure.
If you can say a whole bunch of words, it makes you sound valuable.
Right.
But
well, it's also a Baudrillard effect.
Drill down
you're
and make
up
it air clear time. And simple.
Life is all these bodies, electric bodies, which require content. So you're filling
yeah.
up airtime. And
yeah.
so
right.
you get all these idiotic talking heads. All the shows, like,
oh, it's ridiculous.
Every fucking night they got a new scandal they got to fucking be pissed off at. You know what I mean? Every night. It's a new fucking thing.
But that's,
so,
Bob, that's,
everyone should be more like Bob Bunker.
But that's, no, but like Bob, because that's what's perfect. But Bob said what we get from Ion, and Bob, you know, touched on it during this when he told me I need to change perceptions about kingdoms and realms. And that's where this is. We're able to talk to Bob and Ion, and the meaning of words are always changing. And
we've been more, I mean, I have been morphed than probably everybody here, because now when you go look, listen to a little talk show on YouTube or Rumble, you start to see like everybody's fucking stuck in mortar and they're lost and they're just saying words from what they've learned. Like you only say what you read. All the words you use is what you read. And that's what's going on right now. And now the ship is sinking. And now everybody's trying to use all these words they learned about what's really going on, and they have no fucking clue.
They don't know what the words mean.
The words don't apply.
It's like you're
not a word world.
You're saying something that sounds like something, but you're not.
No, listen, Madeline, it's not a word world. And so I sit here and they say, what are you doing, Bob? What are you doing, Bob? Nothing. I'm just sitting there. What do you think about nothing? That's just my neighbor's thought they're going through, and I'm ignoring it. And so I became an anti-bomber to the Tucker Carlson, all these guys that people are processing. They have their favorite people, and they watch and all that. And I sit here, and I'm forced to have no thought because I'm not going to listen to what they're saying. I'm not going to take it in. It just it has no content. So I spend a lot of time like a sitting Buddha doing nothing or going back and getting an old medium like a book and reading a book. I like it, reading a book. It's slow, it's interesting, and if you get a guy like Lewis. So in proportion, I have a lot of mind stuff going on, but in relationship to Tucker and them, I ain't thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you, Bob, and maybe I'm jumping the gun. Like, I don't want to go too far off. Anyway. Okay. The question is, if the choice is between Thompson and Mary Louise Croker, the only choice is Andromeda, right? Do we have to?
I don't want to live in Croker world.
Mary
Louise.
Or Thompson.
Look. Forget about Andromeda. That's later. You read Mary Louise or Arthur and read Thompson. Read them. Don't be afraid of them.
Okay, but I already know. I've read just enough of both to understand that neither of those, like, I don't want to live in anything that's all that or all the other.
But you're still identifying with it like we were conditioned to do.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, when I read Croker and it feels like a fucking wasteland, I mean, even just that documentary that's posted of him, it's like, holy shit, like everything's so fucking gray, you know, because the flesh is gone.
If I identify
with it, hard, you know, you put it on and it feels uncomfortable. But if I don't identify with it, if I'm grounded in what I've learned by engaging everything here, then, and that's how
it becomes a bigger ground.
Yeah.
Then you can see the ground.
Okay, well,
and then you change your images. You change your images of what you think is causing things. You read Croker and you see he's a figure for a ground. Then you have the images of the ground in your mind. And so that changes your images of what you are.
Remember he says Croker is right, but not so sinister.
Right.
Too ominous.
He goes into the service and disservice of each quadrant for Luce McLuhan, and he did that once.
Okay, so I feel like I had already conquered Croker, and I think I was misled, though, because I found...
Well, that's because you're trying to get somewhere. Once you realize
it's so freaking colorful.
Once you realize that you're not going to get where you're trying to get, then you relax and go back and dip into the spasm and read the book and read it better this time. Because you didn't really understand it when you tried to skim through. You just got frustrated by it.
No, you know what happened? No, I just got absolutely taken with his skill with language. He's poetic. Yeah. He's freaking hilarious. Or she, whoever wrote it.
they both did.
I was less, it seemed like it is sinister, but I was so taken with the way it was written that I couldn't fall into the sinister part of it.
Yeah. That's true. And now...
Well, then why don't you want to live in that world? What were you saying? I don't want to live in that world. Like, what was that about earlier?
It is, okay, so that is the grim part of it. Like, the grim part is there, but I don't want to have to laugh my way through that reality.
Well, there you are. You've got images.
Yeah.
You're afraid of it.
I do.
Get rid of those images.
I am.
Embrace it and enjoy it. It's describing the chip body.
So I'm not enjoying it enough. I'm not letting it all the way in.
Yeah, because you're trying to be something, get somewhere. It's what you call ascension. So you've got to relax on that. And the only way to really ascend is to be able to handle these things or to see their images and then get the ground of it. And then that'll give you a new image repertoire in your mind.
Okay. All right, I get that. Yeah, I was like treading water, like running really fast on top of it.
Yeah, because you're in a rush.
Okay.
You're in a rush to get somewhere. Because you think you're trying to get somewhere under panic conditions. So when you read Thompson is so simple compared to Croker. But Thompson talks about the astral energies and angels. Croker doesn't do that. So there's a whole area of Iandome that Thompson addresses. That Croker doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you appreciate each one of them.
I can't remember what I do, and I can't remember what year it was, but I was visiting my mom after my dad died in 2011 or something. I'm the one who found the bit where Thompson predicted Ion and sent it to you.
Yeah, the biology stuff.
I've delved into some Thompson. Anyway, but not far enough. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, see, Thompson is 70s. So you find out what the 70s world is. And,
Bert, we can hear you.
Yeah, Bert's not talking to us, eh?
I think he was trying to. No?
No, I don't. Anyways, so you read McLuhan's the 60s, Thompson's the 70s, or you get the computer world takes over with Apple.
Okay, wait. Put the brakes on. Croker's before Thompson. I did not realize that.
Croker's after Thompson.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Hey, listen, LaRouche's the 50s, McLuhan's the 60s, Thompson's the 70s, going into the 80s, and then Croker is the 80s and 90s. And then Dobbs is after all that. So the point is, you want to understand the generation, what Generation X grew up in, which you're part of today, that's the Thompson world. So you find out about what the atmosphere in the world was when you were a kid in school and didn't know what was going on. That's the Thompson world. And then
it is Thompson. Yep.
And then the millennial world comes along. And you read about what happened to Alyssa and Clinton, these younger people, through reading Croker. And Croker is describing it before the chip landscape showed up. He wrote this stuff in the late 80s, early 90s, before 95. So you see the decade dance. And you know, look at what's happened. Then you come to Dobbs Quadrant. And that can start 2007, 2008, or 2009, but basically the 10s is all this science fiction shit that's all ionic and came from us, and so you